Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. You must listen to the open loops, a theme park for absurd beliefs and systems of integration between the mind and the creative spirit. Open loops.
Who are you? Why are you here? What wouldn't Meatloaf do for love? These are the questions of your conscious mind. But your unconscious is now tuned in for its favorite late night talk show for the shamelessly fringe. It's Open Loops with Greg Bornstein, conversations that bend. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Open Loops with me, Greg Bornstein, conversations that bend. Love Meatloaf. Rest in peace, Louis Anderson. I mean, going down the list here, rest in peace, Betty White, rest in peace, some people will be mad at that because apparently Betty White is Barbara Bush's sister and they're both children of Aleister Crowley, and Barbara Bush was actually a boy, and that's what you conspiracy believers out there, you'll like that. But also Bob Saget? My gosh, so much. So much, well, you know what? It's looking at death as realizing the impact of people's contribution is sometimes just as significant as feeling the loss. So rest in peace, all the people who have passed in recent weeks, but also rest in peace, my 32nd year of life. I just turned 33, and now we're going to continue doing the show because nothing, that doesn't really change your experience at all. You probably don't even really care. Which is fine, because this show doesn't really care either. At least it doesn't care about the topics that are mainstream. It doesn't care about the socio-political climate. I mean, a little bit, but not in a traditional way, because Open Loops is all about challenging your existing belief systems by sharing radically unique ideas designed to stimulate your unconscious mind and allow you to step into the highest version of yourself. Now, the other thing is, when you're talking about all sorts of things, UFOs, the paranormal, hypnosis, magic, anything intellectually escapist or escapist intellectual, artificial intelligence, time travel, the mysterious, the esoteric, the abstract, all these countercultural, perhaps not really normal conversations, there are very different ways you can experience this. Now, I often come from a very rational perspective, trying to balance outlandish claims or perhaps elaborate on claims and go deeper into them to figure out, discern what's true, what isn't. Very critical thinking mindset. But then you have somebody like Andrew Kirschbaum on, a non-duality speaker. Now, I'm going to tell you what makes Andrew special. He's a very interesting guy. But before I do that, if you enjoy Open Loops, make sure to follow this podcast and subscribe, rate the show, leave a review. Even a couple of words will help get this truly mind-blowing content out there. I mean, this episode is... I wanted to release this after my birthday passed because it is a great way to go into... It's still, you know what? It's early enough. It's the new year. I'm still wearing a party hat that says 2022 on it. Mostly because it's cold, and I don't have a lot of hats around. But yes, I appreciate the one patch of hair in the center of my head in New York City that this 2022 little cone hat covers. Though the string around the ears, after a while, it just look, it's not the best solution, but I will say that as we move into this new year, I want to bliss out. I want to have a good time. I think people just want to feel great. I think people want to really connect with one another in a deeper way. We're tired. We're tired of the pandemic, of course, but we're tired of the energy around the pandemic. We're tired of the energy in this politically divided world. We're, you know, I mean, look, it's... I feel like I should be upset that we went into Iraq still for some reason. Am I still holding on to that? Am I still holding on to George W. Bush in Iraq? Probably. It's somewhere in there. I mean, look, there's just so much strife. Forget it. We gotta move past that. We're all one. We're all... Look, I can't even put it as well as this guest. I didn't know Andrew Kirschbaum. I didn't really know what a non-duality speaker was. But I know when someone says they're a speaker... and they throw non-duality in there, when you speak with them, you're going to encounter something different. You're going to experience something new. Andrew tells his story on this episode, and the best part about it is telling his story, telling his beliefs, speaking to me, speaking to you. I had so many mind-blowing moments. I felt so blissful. I kept saying that word. I actually could not recover for a little bit. I could not. I live in New York. I'm constantly going, no, but life is terrible here. That man put me in a good mood. How dare he? How dare he? I'm in New York City. I'm supposed to be the absolute wretched level of existence. It's freezing, and yet Andrew Kirschbaum lifted me up. And the best part is, you listen to this, you will lift up too, and he explains why. He explains, or he doesn't. I'm not even sure what happened, to be honest with you. I just experienced non-dual speaking, and look, I'm taking off the party hat for this, because I'm free of this now. I don't need to hold on to anything. I'm blissing out. I'm blissing out thinking about Andrew's work. I mean, you should reach out to this guy. Book a session with this guy. You're going to get, it's amazing that he came on, and he does sessions with people, but he didn't charge me anything for this. He just gave from his heart non-duality, connecting you to whatever you want to call it, source, one, everything. Yes. If you want to just feel good, put on a couple minutes of this sometime. Andrew Kirschbaum nails it. And it's an experiential listening thing. And it really is. I experience such joy listening to it. I think you're going to like it. Here he is, non-duality speaker, Andrew Kirschbaum.
Today on Open Loops, we have Andrew Kirschbaum, non-duality speaker. Now, I was telling Andrew before we started this, I've seen some of his posts, I've read some of the things he's putting out there to the public, but I deliberately did not watch him speak in anything because I wanted to really understand firsthand. I wanted to encounter the experience of non-duality speech. So I don't know what direction this interview is going to go in, but we're going to talk about a lot of deep, deep things, I believe, or maybe not deep. We'll find out. Andrew, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you. Appreciate you.
Yes, I am honored to speak with you. Here's my question before we go into this. I mean, are you always speaking non-dual, or is that something you turn on? What do you mean by this?
So imagine how you would talk to a 5-year-old about Santa Claus. Do you believe that? No.
Right.
But you might talk to them that way for the convenience of how it plays out. So in that way, sometimes I will speak dualistically. Actually, all speech is dualistic. All words are concepts that point to a dualistic misunderstanding. And all understanding is a misunderstanding. And all knowledge is a myth.
Whoa. So, okay.
So non-duality speaker is an oxymoron on two levels. On one, it's because it sounds like there's someone speaking about the ultimate nature of reality, which ultimately can't be spoken of. And on another angle, this energy system here isn't under the delusion that there's somebody here speaking now, and yet it's calling itself a non-duality speaker.
that is very, I mean, it's a very humble position, I believe, to take in a lot of ways. Maybe you wouldn't put a label like that on it, but I know that's what we're doing to try to give people some conceptualization of what's going on here. Tell me this. When did this... You had an experience, didn't you? Wasn't there an awakening story?
I had a radical shift in perspective, which most people refer to as awakening, enlightenment, or liberation, that occurred 4.5 years ago here.
Wow. How does that happen for people that want
to know? Spontaneously.
Really?
It's primarily an energetic shift in the feeling tone. It lasts at least as long as the remainder of the lifetime.
Wow. Now I've heard people talk about these spontaneous moments before, but it's interesting to get there are a lot of seekers for them at certain points in my life. I've just been a fan of chasing altered states of consciousness, not necessarily with drugs, but just in general. I love consciousness and altering it. So when people told me about this mythical idea of enlightenment, and in high school you read Siddhartha, you think, oh, it's a thing that happens, and then you experience something amazing and whatnot. Can you speak to what that experience is? Is it as good as the hype?
It depends on who you're talking to, because some people will put it down like, it's not what, and some people will really hype it up. So it's somewhere in between. Very ordinary. It's very down to earth. It's very casual. It's very friendly. It's very intimately you.
Oh.
But it's not the you think you are as the seeking ego mind. So what changes, one way I would put this is seekers and sages both are always constantly projecting at all times, but what is projected is different because what is felt and seen is different. So we are always projecting, all humans are always projecting our energetic, emotional, felt state of being, as well as our perspective of self or world, however you want to put it. So what changes is what is felt.
Oh.
So what is realized allows one to feel a certain way, but it's not something that's known or understood.
Yeah.
It's often referred to as the peace that surpasses understanding, things like that. The way I would put it is there's five categories of mentation or of not mentation. There's five categories of, I don't know what you'd call it, but you have belief, understanding, knowing, gnosis, and realization.
Right.
Now notice the thumb's a little different than the other fingers, you know?
Yes. Oh my gosh, you are a wise sage. Holy crap. Wait a minute, what? this is very interesting. Okay, so we gotta figure this out here. So gnosis, and realization's the top one. So wait a minute. Did you go, now were you going through, tell me this, 4 years ago, if we were to go rewind time, were you already on the path here? Were you studying this stuff?
Oh, yeah, my whole life.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So just to do a really brief overview, when I was 8 years old, which is when most people fall out of the awakened state.
Right.
On average, it's different for everybody. On average, most humans fall out of the natural state around 8 years old. And when I was 8 years old, I noticed that seeking and suffering and depression had begun. And I was able to articulate it out loud at 8 years old. I was able to say, I feel depressed because I feel as though I'm separate from the rest of the universe. It's the loneliest feeling ever.
Yes.
By the time I was 12, I was actively dedicating the entirety of my life to seeking out and finding enlightenment within this lifetime. By age 16, the Kundalini energy had activated, kicked online. and siddhis and things started manifesting. By age 24, I had a kundalini, a spontaneous full-blown kundalini awakening into an astral samadhi, which you can view in the gnosis category.
Right.
It was like meeting God. It was like seeing the other side of things. And I conversed with that and learned all kinds of things. Now I realize that isn't some separate being.
Right, right.
It's you. It's me. And then 3 years after that, I witnessed a multidimensional astral geometric shape of light above the head. It was like the energy signature or a light body of some kind. And then 5 months after that, liberation occurred. And that was 4.5 years ago. And that was my awakening actually happened on Father's Day of 2017, which was a Sunday in the year of the rooster.
Oh, my gosh.
Just by chance.
Just by chance. Now, did your family know? I mean, I'm sure you brought all this stuff up. If you're 8 years old and bringing these things up, they might really be concerned. Most parents might. I mean, were they at all? Had they explored this themselves? I mean, what was the reaction to you? This was just a you thing.
It's just, you know, I don't know. It's like I was very clever. Still am, I guess. Don't need it though. Awakening does not feel like intelligence. I basically had, you know, the same seeking energy every ego mind has, but I also had like ADHD or bipolar tendencies. So it's probably just assumed that, you know, the depression is from bipolar tendencies or something like that. But really it's what everyone goes through. There's this gnawing hole that won't fill itself in the heart of one's being because they assume they're this character. And this character seems to be separate. And so they have this felt sense of separation. So I would define the ego as a felt sense of separation. And that delusion, when it ends, suffering ends. And when suffering ends, seeking ends. And what the seeker finds is its own absence.
Oh, crap. Ay, 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 ay. You're pulling me in and out of voids and abysses. And I mean, but I
We're
love
crossing
that.
The abyss together.
Yes, yes. I this is fascinating. I mean, it's pretty remarkable to have such an early experience like this. And I always wonder, you know, in terms of, well, they talk about how when sometimes you have a state like that, you have this awakening, it is very hard to ground yourself again. You have to isolate yourself from people. You might even lose interest in all material conversations or whatnot. I mean, did you have a period where you cut yourself off from others, or where do you think you are in that trajectory?
So I was like hopelessly addicted to Facebook for the past decade, still am, and yes, in a good way. And, you know, when awakening first struck, I basically left Facebook for 2 years. So in that way, and I had a huge, you know, network of people that I was talking to all over the world even before this. And so to cut myself off from that was a pretty big deal. You know, I took that was really a big part of my life that I took a break from. You know, I find it harder to read books now. I find it harder to, I was a singer, songwriter, guitarist, pretty prolific. And now that I don't need that, it's like, you know, like I had tendencies to drink alcohol, smoke pot, chain smoke cigarettes, black coffee. I don't need any of that now. Like I can still have that if I want it, right? You're free, but nothing at all is needed. It's actually realized that there's no such thing as need. Need implies I'm gonna die without it. Well, there's no such thing as death.
What? Now
there's no such thing as life, and yet here we are. Isn't it exquisitely beautiful?
This duality. My gosh.
Isn't it colorful?
Yeah, it is. Now, I mean, this is very interesting to be in a place where You live that experience. I wonder is that you coming out and coming back to the world? When did you decide it was time to come back? Let's go there.
Yeah, it kind of, it, it does itself in stages. So upon awakening, what happens is there's the freshness of the contrast of having suffered and then an ending, of having been confused and now this absolute clarity, undeniable clarity. And there's a phase for most that go through this process that lasts a few weeks, sometimes around a month, something like that on average. I mean, I like to call that the non-dual honeymoon phase.
Oh.
And it's after that phase, the remnants, the like 10% remnants within the energy body of the, I call it the ghost of Andrew, you know, the ghost of the character, just a little bit of it kind of trickles back in, and a little bit of reactivity comes back, and a little bit of your, the way I would put it is upon awakening, 90% of all trauma, all emotional charge tied to memory, all mental illness, all seeking, all suffering ends suddenly all at once. And all attachment melts away instantly, not until then. And what remains, there's still this 10% of your stuff in your energy body, if you will, your traumas, your reactivities, your whatever, your hangups, if you will, 10% of that remains. And over time, you know, first that 10%, at first it's not even there. And then that 10% trickles back in. And then it slowly dissolves over time on its own. But yeah, I might be getting sidetracked here. I don't want to ramble. So
No. This is good. This is good. I want to know what this 10%, what compelled the 10% to come back, especially and really seem to lean into spreading this awakening. This spiritual kind of talk.
Yeah, I had always been talking about this very subject as long as I can remember, and I just didn't know exactly what I was talking about because I wasn't in that state. And I knew that I wasn't under the assumption that, oh, I'm enlightened and I don't talk about I wasn't under that assumption prior to awakening, and upon awakening I'm not under the assumption that there's somebody here that can claim anything or be anything, and which is pretty liberating. And it's the end of identity.
The
enlightenment is the
of
end
identity.
Of identification.
Interesting. I do wonder about how that works in this modern world. I really do. I mean, I think you're doing by putting yourself out there with this the smoke screen, if you will, which if that's not a metaphor for life, what is? Non-duality speaker, in parentheses, calling yourself this, is a way for all of us to at least have some semblance of what you represent. But I also imagine, I mean, does the metaverse support the enlightened? Will it? Can it? Mm-hmm. Do you think for people that are waking up, are we going to have to just shatter everything that we have and build a new society and new institutions and structures for us to be able to communicate in this higher place? I mean, I'm curious.
It's always already happening. So, this is it happening. Yeah. So we're in the midst of that which we seek at all times.
Really?
But, you know,
I mean, that's a pretty optimistic view, because some people
everything
would say
is destroying and creating itself at the same time. You know, it's like the phoenix every moment.
Right.
It's always fresh. And, I think it's becoming more and more, not mainstream, but it's not quite as elusive as it used to be. Like what I'm doing is simply trying to make myself available as an interface, an impersonal interface to clarity to be used. So, I'm just trying to make myself available on as many platforms as possible. So it started off on Facebook, writing, you know, messaging, being in groups, and then I expanded into doing talks, and I've recorded probably approaching 200 talks since March, recorded hour, 2 hour talks. And I've put probably about 30 of them on YouTube so far. I'm going to be publishing, you know, at least 90% of them eventually.
What happens in those talks? Is that just you quote unquote channeling, or what would you say? How do those topics get formed?
So they're spontaneous arisings, and it's kind of a combination of energetic transmission, silent transmission, and clarity through word concepts, all wrapped into one. So there's an energetic transmission behind my voice right now, for example. It's very subtle that some detect. And after a talk with me, people tend to be smiling and full of energy and bliss. And, this is an empowering, relieving message. There's no way you could ever make the wrong choice. There's nothing you're responsible for, good or bad. There's nothing that really matters, which is actually liberating if you can hear it from the right angle. And the message can sound very dark and spooky to the mind because it's negating it. And what it is the primary delusion, this felt sense of separation, when in fact, there is no separation. I am you.
Yo. Yeah. No, you definitely, the bliss comes through. Now, I know that I believe your testimonials. I mean, I know that I'm naturally someone that, I went to school to study acting, so I know that I can definitely feel the transmission and receive it. Whenever people come on, I really reflect their energy. Mm. So that's just something that I naturally have, but I do wonder, you know, what does happen? Does everybody, when people talk to Andrew Kirschbaum, people in the worst moods, their job is terrible, they hate their parents, you know, what do you think is going on there that you're able to bring them to bliss? Are you always
energy?
It's energy
and clarity and empowerment.
Wow. I mean, what if I were to say, hey, look, my relationship with my parents stresses me out. They're on me too much about work. And I should be making more money and I should be married at this point.
Should.
Yeah. Yeah. You would just laugh at the shoulds.
I would shrug them off. You know, the word shoulders is spelled shoulders. You know, I don't know. I'd shrug it off. It's what everyone should do, right? It's there's these contractions in the energy body, in the beliefs, concepts that people have, which are based primarily on delusion, which they don't want to hear necessarily. But, 99.9% of adult humans are insane. They're deluded. They're suffering.
Yes.
Yes. An awakening is sanity. It's clarity. It's the dawning of clarity. There's an undeniable clarity here. There's an undeniable charge here. Yeah.
Yeah. Are you like this in daily life too? I mean, you go into, you know, a restaurant with a waiter. Do they feel the bliss?
It's more concentrated in these talks, like a laser beam, because it's not necessarily how do you navigate a world of insanity with sanity? Yeah. So it's concentrated and focused in these talks, and it's amplified in magnitude in these talks. These talks are, in a way, my practice. So when you're out and about in the dualistic world, chatting up the cashier at Target, can they tell? I mean, they could probably sense that there's something different. And that's about it.
Yeah. I mean, it's very hypnotic. One of the great principles of being a hypnotist is you have to go there first. And the idea be the change in the world you want to see. The idea of that relating to interpersonal communication I don't think it's something people think about enough. I mean, it would be interesting if everybody just came from this blissful place of clarity and sanity.
Probably be kind of boring.
Yeah, that's the thing. Would it be? But would it be interesting? You're right.
From the awakened perspective, the sage doesn't want to change the world. It's absolutely perfect as it is. Every moment of it is absolutely exquisitely beautiful. Every little thing is paradise. And the seeker doesn't want to hear this. because their world is on fire and there's human trafficking and war and torture. And how could the sage possibly be right that it's perfect? Maybe the sage is right. No, that's not a sage. You're seeing the world upside down. Oh. So what happens is the seeker sees the world upside down. It's the wrong view, if you will. And it's the same world. It's the same dream of separation, even though there isn't any. And yet, upon awakening, that samsara turns into nirvana. It's the same world, seen right side up. It's been this way all along. Little kids don't have a problem with the world, unless there's something horrifically going wrong. If it's just every day, they're joyous. Like, why? Because they're in the awakened state. Just like your cat, your dog, your three-year-old, and only 0.1% of adult humans.
So you're telling me that it would be pretty boring if everybody was awakened. But isn't that... I mean...
No, it's not the point. The point is to enjoy.
Well, the point's to enjoy. But my idea is that...
Yes, it's easier to enjoy after for most.
Right. Right. Why not... could someone that's the 1% of the richest people say, well, no, of course, it's better to be at the top. It's much more interesting to have more money than everyone else, because if everybody did, then this money would not be special.
Well, you know, most people that have an insane amount of money are profoundly miserable.
That's true, too.
And the reason for that is because they've realized much sooner that that's not it. That doesn't give you that feeling that you've been seeking since your earliest memories. That this can't be purchased. That 9 mansions and $50 billion and 17 wives can't touch this. That nothing of this world or in this world can ever fulfill or satisfy the ego mind. It is not of the nature of the ego mind to be satisfied. And so awakening is the falling away of that dissatisfaction, and you're only left with what is the case, truly.
Right. That makes sense. I'm just wondering, this whole idea of, are you sure it's not an egoic judgment to say that it would be boring if everybody was awakened?
Egoic judgment. Let me put it this way. What's your favorite video game? Is it a peaceful paradise, everything's perfect type game? I bet you $1 million it isn't. Let me guess. Some kind of post-apocalyptic war-based, you see what I'm saying? Survival simulation. Well, that's what this is. I quite enjoy this game because it's not real.
But is that coming from the 10% or the 90%?
Pardon?
Is that coming from Ghost Andrew or Awakened Andrew? Because
there is no Andrew. At no point is Andrew awakened. It's not the character that wakes up. It's the background, pristine, non-dual awareness that we all share that wakes up to itself. So there is no delusion here thinking that it's Andrew speaking, for example.
So wait a minute. I knew this was going to get interesting. Okay. But what about... I just want to really understand this. Oh, of course
That's
I do.
The problem. I'm just kidding.
No, you're right. I know. I set myself up for that. No. I know. This is what you do.
This is the piece that surpasses understanding.
This is beautiful. You're putting me in the Coens, and I. This is great.
The seeker desperately wants to know and understand more, because it assumes wrongly that somehow that'll lead to it feeling well.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. What do you think? Should I? I have all these books. Should I burn them? But I love the knowledge.
What'd you do with your baby toys when you're done with them? Did you burn them? Not you don't even know where they are. They don't even matter anymore, do they?
It's true. That's true.
When you outgrow something, you outgrow it. Not until then. And there's nothing wrong with books, but you won't find enlightenment in there. That's not to say you can't wake up from reading a book some sage has written or something. That happens sometimes. But this is, as Zen would say, this is a special transmission outside of the scriptures. In other words, this is utterly beyond language. And so... the main thing happening in my talks is a transmission of energy, clarity, and stillness, even though there's this manic, chatty guy throwing all these words around.
But okay, I know I'm so set on you calling an awakened world boring. I'm just zoned in on that because I'm going,
Well,
what
here's the
is.
thing, here's the main thing, right? The seeker thinks, well, if blah 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 blah, then blah 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 blah. No, it's already perfect. So does the world need everyone to be awake? Well, the world is composed of liberation. The world is already composed entirely of freedom. You already are enlightenment. Do you need it? No. Do you need to know about it? No. Do you even need to realize it? No. You are it. You are the truth you've been seeking. You are the light of this world. That's what Jesus meant to say, because he was a non-duality speaker, so they killed him. But you know.
Wow. People do say that Jesus is, he's certainly more of a hippie
Wake.
Than a lot of, he's definitely tapped into something more than a lot of other figures in the Bible. Now, Son of God, I mean.
Aren't we all? They're not even son of. The Father and I am one. That's what's so beautiful, you know? The awakening here happened on Father's Day. I was this hyper-Buddhist guy. I'm having Judeo-Christian synchronicities. It's hilarious.
Oh, that is weird.
Wasn't on the Buddha's birthday or anything in heaven. No, no. It was on Father's Day. Father and I are one. It was on a Sunday in the year of the rooster. Rooster is always a symbol of awakening and Jesus and Lucifer all at the same time. It's the break of dawn, the dawning of clarity, the dawning of this light that you are.
So you hold all that, those synchronicities are significant to you.
Yes, there's two sides to that, right? Like one side wants to say that's the ego mind projecting meaning where it actually doesn't belong, trying to connect concepts that don't belong,
right.
Trying to find meaning where there isn't any, and that's true. However, if you have a deep enough series of these synchronicities that are not simply the mind doing that, then there's no doubt. Like there's only a divine timing, so... What is actually happening in those moments of synchronicity is the awareness has increased beyond its regular threshold. So it starts to see what's already always happening. In other words, the whole world is always divinely scripted and timed perfectly every moment. And if your awareness increases for a little bit, you might get a glimpse of that for a moment. Oh, wow. But if you have 100 of those a day, it's no longer, oh, wow, it's, yeah. You know?
Right.
It's like, I made toast today. It's like, yeah. Yeah, but you don't understand. I have a toaster and it plugs into the wall. And you're like, yeah. Yeah, but it's electric. It's an electric toaster that cooks bread. And you're like, yeah, we all have one. Yeah, I understand. You know?
Is
it's
there
not that
more
mind-blowing anymore.
Is there more mind-blowing that's for you? Is there more enlightenment for Andrew?
So it's a never-ending falling into itself. So more and more liberation every day. More and more clarity every day. More and more ease, and certain things return that I didn't know would return. And one of those is like excitement. You know, I thought excitement died upon awakening.
Oh.
Because it's so neutral, so calm, that I assumed I'd just be the old man on the park bench at the amusement park from now on.
Yes.
And now I find myself in line to get on the roller coaster again. You know?
Oh, that's great.
And I didn't expect that. So yes, there is a type of, to return to the question I accidentally neglected earlier, there is a full circle return
oh.
of the personal, of the dualistic, of everything, right? So non-duality includes duality.
Right.
It's the infinitely open-ended ultimate umbrella term. And it includes everything, including exclusion.
Oh boy.
So non-duality includes duality. So the world the seeker is trying to change or escape from, the sage quite enjoys as absolute perfection, paradise, as it is, as you are.
I've always thought the words duality and not, I've always been annoyed that non-duality, we have to use the non to explain what it is. I'm going, yeah. Wait, why
That's
can't
how
we
words
come?
Work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what is that? Wait, why can't we come up with another word for what this is? I mean, I guess
that's
you could...
what the seeking mind likes to say. Another way the seeking mind would rephrase this, if it was feeling bold, is it would say, okay, Mr. Non-Duality Speaker, can't you phrase this just a little bit clearer so that I can understand this? I think you might have missed one word. Like, isn't there just one slightly better word you could have used to? No, the ultimate, you see, the structure of language is inherently dualistic and conceptual.
Yes. Yes.
So the only thing we have when using word concepts is dualistic. So that's why silent transmission sometimes, or energetic transmission, may be more helpful, because this is utterly beyond words. This is utterly beyond concepts. This is a pre-verbal, pre-conceptual awareness. It isn't thinking. It isn't even consciousness. It's awareness. It's this background, pristine witness. There's no interpretation. There's just the clarity of witnessing.
What exactly is anything in your head right now? Are there any concepts, or are you just...
It's not even my head.
That's a good point.
There is no my.
I'm just wondering, you know, what is the neurological experience of...
The neurological experience within the brain is a calming down of the networked patterns that relate to the emergence of the delusion of a separate self. So all that shit, the prefrontal neocortex, etc., it calms down. It's the opposite of a seizure. Instead of a runaway freight train of activity, it calms down. The dust settles. The ripples settle. There's only non-dual pristine awareness, what you really are. Which is eternal.
Yeah.
Infinite. It's clear, loving, spacious, vast, impersonal.
Now look, you're not, what's great about you is that you're not a awakening, I'm sure, can happen at 3 years old. People are there already.
I have one friend that never experienced unawakening, so they were born awake and are still awake. They're the only person like that I've ever met. I have another close friend who woke up at 8 years old, you know, the same age I had the unawakening. They had the awakening, so they must have suffered for, you know, a year or less, or days or months or whatever, you know what I mean? So yeah, it can happen at any age. The average age for awakening is around 50. In this story here, it happened at 27.
Yeah. What is this? I mean, that's pretty interesting. Do people go, what is this guy talking about?
Of course, this
man is smoking drugs.
I posted, what the hell am I rambling on about this time?
Right. Right. I mean, it's, you're right. It does tend to happen a little later in life for a lot of people.
For most, if it happens. About 1 in 1,000, it'll happen. And of those, the average age is about 50. You know, and in the average lifetime, maybe the last 3 seconds of your life, you'll be in that state.
Oh, my
gosh.
First
7 or 8 years in the last 3 seconds on average. It's a very tenacious, energetic pattern. It's a very stubborn, clever.
Beyond bliss, what are the benefits of this state? Why would somebody want to really go into the non-dual?
Well, do you want to end suffering or not? Right? That's the litmus test. Are you still suffering? Well, yeah, well then.
Yeah. That's a good point.
It's a pretty big deal, isn't it? People do everything in this world to not suffer, to end the seeking, to end the suffering. And this is the end of seeking and suffering.
Wow.
Also the end of you, the end of everything you think is yours. It's the end of everything you've ever known. It's the end of, it's the stripping away of what you think you have. It's losing everything. It's exactly like death. It's not a near-death experience. It's a death non-experience. It's
is it different than ego death? Ego death seems like it's
permanent
specific.
Ego death.
Oh.
It's but in a functional way. Like, yeah. I'm not like debilitated and in a coma right now. I'm very hyper-functional, yeah. So
right.
It's permanent. It's not even, it feels like death to the ego. It feels exactly like death. In fact, it feels like attending your own funeral and mourning and grieving for the death of that character, kind of like if you had a twin brother, but much closer. Yeah.
Mm.
And It's also, on the flip side, it's like the best birthday party you never had. Like the ultimate birthday party that no one ever actually gets. Yeah, right. You actually get it. But you're at your own funeral while you get it. So there's confetti in the air at your own funeral and you feel just fine.
Is there, so you're telling me that there, because I did, I asked this question way back to the Facebook community. I was curious what they'd say, and I said, spiritual awakening, joyful experience or most painful experience?
Both.
And a lot of people were divided. Yeah,
so it's neutral. It's neutral. Like it, there's three or more common reactions to awakening. The two most common actually didn't happen to me. So there's a third option here. Usually you hear about this in Zen or other traditions talking about this, is, you know, people just crack up laughing like it's fucking hysterical, or right. They just break down and weep and weep and weep.
Yeah.
And for me, there was no reaction. It was just utterly, utterly calm and neutral and unsurprising and ordinary. And there wasn't a reaction here. There was just totally calm, total neutrality.
Wow.
Now, if you, yeah, I mean, the reason it's, you know, as Jesus would say, it's harder for a rich man to get into heaven. It's like a camel passing through the eye of a needle. What he meant there was everything is taken from you. And then you become all or nothing or one. It's all the same. But there are levels to this, you know, and a fleeting feeling of oneness on the peak of an acid trip. That's not it. You know, that's a glimpse of it. And that's beautiful, but that's not, you don't bring it back with you when the trip ends. Or if you get zapped with Kundalini by some Shakti master like myself or others that can do that, it's probably a fleeting glimpse. Like, you, oh wow, I finally have it. They're right. I'm even more frustrated than before. So that's why I try to do a more subtle transmission most of the time, just because it's more gradual and semi-permanent. It's like a subtle on-ramp, you know. But I forget what I was talking about.
Well, I know what you're talking about, the joy versus the pain of awakening.
Yeah, if somebody had a machine and they could hook me up to this machine and some multi-billionaire up to this machine, and I would be given $50 billion and my enlightenment would be transferred to them, I would not consider that a fair deal. I would decline. Yeah.
Why is that?
Because there's nothing in this world like this feeling. This is not something that can be purchased or found in the world or of the world. This alone is unique and unlike anything else.
Wow. You mentioned that you are, as you're connecting with others, you're slowly transferring this energy in a way that keeps it going. Is that, am I changing right now as I'm having this interview with you? Am I going to walk away through this and be further on the journey of enlightenment?
To be quite blunt about it, it'll speed it up. It'll catalyze it at least a little bit.
Oh, wow. Is there, now, can we break down why that is? Is there
energy?
It's just energy.
I mean, there's a lot there. Primarily, though, fundamentally, if I'm being direct and honest with you, it's energy. It's also the rewiring of the neural networks. It's also mirror neuron activity of my body language and the emptiness that can be detected by your energy body and subconscious mind and your mirror neurons, your neural patterns. I'm actually also shutting down certain neural patterns of delusion that lead to suffering. And so a little more bliss than normal will be there with you after this call ends, I'm sure.
Now I definitely am experiencing, I definitely feel very tapped into you, very present, very,
yes.
Yeah. What is going on there? I mean, are you the greatest hypnotist ever?
It's actually dehypnosis. So the seeker is in the state of hypnosis. It has fallen into a slumber, and that's why this is called awakening. In hypnosis, we call it somnambulance, which is that state of being asleep or sleepy, and this is why this is called awakening. It's the dehypnosis, the disillusionment. It's seeing through the magic trick in a way that you can't unsee. Now that you know how the trick is done, you can't ever be tricked again. You can't be the hooks of the delusion of the ego mind, the seeking energy. What is the ego mind? It's seeking energy. It's the seeking energy that does. So there's these patterns of selfing in the energy body and in the brain, in the neural networks, in the cellular memory. And the 90% of all of those energetic impressions are wiped clean upon enlightenment. And so that remaining 10% is manageable. It doesn't even need to go away. It's just, yeah. It's whatever. It might dissolve, might not. It doesn't really matter because it's so manageable. It's so effortless now, which is very radically different from the state of suffering intensely for many, many, many years. And so it's remarkable. It's worth talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
Worth sharing.
I mean, this is beautiful. By the way, if you are listening out there, Andrew does do these. He does coaching sessions, and also we'll just sit down with you and have a non-dual talk. So this is something that is available if you want to experience this bliss. You're probably already experiencing this if you're listening right now. I am so intrigued by, well, at least... When do you think this way that you can now look at the world and its constructions and really see that it is all an illusion? I mean, this is something I've read in books for years. It's something that I've had people speak about. And yet, I don't know. I probably could fudge a version of non-dual speaking. If someone gave me money, I could probably
pretend to be enlightened. Yeah.
Yes, probably.
Now, here's the problem with that. I'm one of the few people that will call out people doing that publicly.
Who is doing that publicly?
I don't want to get into it necessarily, but...
Is Jim Carrey enlightened? Let's hear it right now. Jim Carrey, you believe is.
Yes. I know he is.
Eckhart Tolle.
Yeah, that's how Jim Carrey woke up. He hung around Jeff Foster and Eckhart, who were in this state. Now he's in this state. Yes.
Wow. But there are people out there that aren't. Well, tell me, you don't have to name names, though. You can.
I mean, if you say the name, I'll tell you whether they are or aren't.
Oh, what kind of a game
is this?
But
I'm not going to bring out a name. You know what I mean?
Deepak Chopra. I don't think he is.
Hard to say.
I don't think he
probably
is.
Not. Hard to say. I don't want to shit on anybody. You know what I mean? I don't want to be like, oh. But at the same time, I'll either say yes, no, I'll tell you my confidence level, you know what I mean, in the response, but probably not, you know.
Do you know David Hawkins, his work?
Sounds vaguely familiar.
He was the power versus force guy. I feel he kinesthesiology has the whole ranking of consciousness. He put numbers to consciousness, like you should look into that. I'd be curious what your thoughts on this are, actually. There's a map of consciousness, and he says most of the world is below a certain threshold, below 200, and that's where pain is.
Oh, that fucking guy. Okay, now I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, what do you think's up with that guy?
I get quite irritated by his book because I'll get people that message me things like, well, you know, Andrew, you're at a 700, but I'm at 1,000.
Oh, you know? Gosh.
And I'll know for sure they haven't even experienced what I'm talking about yet. I'll say, listen, I'm open-minded to the idea that you're more enlightened than I am and that it keeps going. However, if that was the case, wouldn't you know what I'm talking about? You know, it's like, wouldn't you remember this stage? Because I remember all the stages that led to this one. I can speak about what it was like. How come you don't know what I'm talking about when I say there's no one here?
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah.
So if they can't tell me, you know, if they don't know what I'm even talking about, then how could they have gone past it? Yeah.
That's a good point.
If I say, do you remember being 5 years old and believing in Santa Claus? You say, I have no idea what the fuck you're talking about. Then, do you know what I mean? So yeah, I get that sometimes. People will, they'll think they're enlightened. And, you know, there's no such thing as an enlightened person. It's not the persona that awakens. There isn't somebody here named Andrew that's enlightened. That's not the case. At no point is the character enlightened. The character is the delusion.
Right.
So upon enlightenment, there isn't anyone here. It's impersonal awareness running the show.
Yes, yes. So wait, is impersonal awareness, does that mean that the universe is intelligent?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the universe is composed of the infinite attentional awareness of what most people would call God, even though that gives the wrong idea, because then if I say the word God, you're going to say, okay, yeah, there's a self, me, and then there's God, this separate being that's higher than me. No, like there's no you and there's no God. There's just this. And this isn't someone. This isn't a person. This is vast, spacious, impersonal awareness. And it's in the same way that empty space is charged with energy, that energy kind of just leaks out and generates universes. And it's all dream. They're actually, so what composes the universe is a form of white light or a form of infinite electrical energy that we would call Kundalini, or we would call the clear light, or it goes by many names. And that is the movement of awareness. That's the activity of, or the rippling nature of awareness through awareness. And so that's why light moves quickly. That's why lightning moves quickly, because this is awareness moving through itself as itself that generates what we call energy. And then what we know of as the world and all experience is composed of that energy. So the koan I have for you then would be, how much energy exists within a dream?
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Oh, golly.
I'm sorry.
No, it's beautiful. No, keep them coming.
You don't have to answer it. It's just a question. It's okay.
Keep them coming. Keep them coming. No, I love this stuff. I love it. I'm always looking to have my mind blown. This has certainly happened a lot of times so far tonight. Yeah. My gosh, wait a sec. There was something else I was going to ask you, but now my brain is twisty. What does this mean then about... I completely forget what I was going to ask you. Wow, this is...
Words don't mean anything.
See, now, does this happen a lot? People must just... do you just put people into these... Have you ever said anything that has made someone just... I think I'm awakened now.
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. Do people have to pay extra for that?
Actually, I think I did that one for free.
<That's> ironic, oh my gosh. Isn't it?
I have a buddy that does something similar, and he woke somebody up, and the guy gifted him $10,000. I wasn't quite that lucky on the financial side of it. It was some rich guy, and he woke up, and he's like, oh, let me give you $10,000. I'm like, oh, wow, that must be nice. But no, I have had people wake up through talking with me. And I've definitely seen, even talk to talk, how radically catalyzing it can be for the trajectory of their life story, even. It's simply inhabiting a different vibe. And that vibe is, you know, a wild, free, empowered frequency.
Yeah. After we get off this call, I'm wondering, what am I going to do with this? I mean, yeah, see, there's the seeker again. There's the seeker. But,
you have to schedule another talk, no?
Exactly. Or how do I, where do I study this more? Do I learn more about the illusion that is everything? I mean, what is...
I mean, I do offer my YouTube channel for free. It has over 30 or 40 hours worth of content right now. I'll be uploading content all the time. And yeah, I mean, that side of it's free. And a lot of people will find me on YouTube and then sign up to do a talk with me. I tend to do a suggested donation of about $50 an hour for when I do anything, really. Whether it's empowerment life coaching or non-duality talks, you know, trying to awaken, or receiving energetic transmissions, things like that. And, you know, as like a day job to like pay the bills and stuff, I also make websites. If, you know, if anybody wants a professional grade website, I do that too. Yeah.
Yeah, well, look, we're gonna link to your YouTube page as well as your Facebook page, where people can see a lot of what's going on. The other thing is this: you started this movement. It looks like, I know there's a Facebook group, this movement of pirates. Can you talk a little bit about that? A non-dual,
yeah,
pirates?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I created a private group that it's called Non-Duality Pirate Rogues. Now, what that came from was I was kind of bumping elbows with the radical non-duality community, which is...
What is that? Tell me about that community.
So radical non-duality is something that was repackaged into a certain type of expression in 1995. And it's a very clear, direct way of pointing to this, but most people don't like it. And people can get stuck in the concepts of it if they're viewing it from the wrong angle. And so even non-duality can become a type of trap. It's like magnetic quicksand, and you can get stuck in it. And yeah, so you're stuck in duality, then you can get stuck in non-duality. And so this is like a further deepening of liberation in a way that, you know, you're free to anything, you know, it's like no rules. So I saw a bunch of these radical non-duality groups that are very, you know, dogmatic and rigid in certain structures with their rules. And I thought, well, this is the opposite of what I'm trying to express, you know? So I wanted to create a group that was something between like regular satsang and like a bar fight. You know, it's like it's like the Wild West meets pirates meets soft spoken satsang, you know. It's,
yeah, like, because I'm in there, I see people post stuff, I'm going, I have no idea what this has to do with spirituality. Maybe that's the point. Yeah, though. Is this absurdist, yeah, or is it spiritual?
Yeah,
I'm not sure.
It's yeah, and it's even like intentionally juvenile on a certain level.
Yeah,
because it's wild. It's like a 3-year-old running around the yard screaming its head off. It's like that, because that's the awakened state. That's a sage. You know, a sage is a wild animal.
Hmm.
And so I didn't want to get sucked into just radical non-duality, because my message is a lot more than that. You know, radical non-duality tends to look down upon synchronicity or kundalini or astral samadhi type states, because people have had this liberation experience, they've had this shift in perspective, but maybe not any of that other stuff. And so they throw the baby out with the bathwater and they say, oh, that's just the delusions of the seeking mind generating a project. No, it's not. You know, it's not. And so that's why I came into the picture. I feel like I had something to say. I feel like the community needed clarification on certain things and how these things connect. Now, be kundalini, sorcery, siddhi, synchronistic stuff, the energetic with shamanism, the entheogenic and the pre-verbal awareness, and enlightenment. And those three things in my story go hand in hand. So even though they're separate domains of inquiry, they're linked in a way. Yeah. And I wanted to do something that fully acknowledged the power of radical non-duality, which is kind of like having a gun in your back pocket. Like, it's powerful, but do you really need it right now for this at all times? Like, you don't just wave it around, point it at everybody. It's a very powerful thing to have if you need it. It's the most direct, clear expression. But if that's all you're doing, you're missing out on a lot of other stuff, a lot of other layers of ways you could connect with people and help alleviate suffering and increase bliss and help them feel empowered. And you could say some people say I'm a bodhisattva. Others would say I'm a recovering rescuer, you know, because the victim, the bully, and the rescuer are like the drama triangle, you know. And on a certain level, nobody needs saving. Nobody needs liberating, because there's only liberation. However, those that resonate with me, who've had enough of suffering seeking, they finally really had enough. And they really do want to take that final step, that final inquiry. They tend to come to me. And those that come to me tend to be born shamans. They tend to be born sorcerers. And they tend to be born with the wiring required to awaken.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you heard him out there, listeners.
Sound familiar? No.
He said some good stuff to me right there. Yes. Look, I mean, I appreciate that non-intentional, intentional compliment. I'm not even sure. And also those of you listening, that's to you too. I mean, you're listening to this podcast. Tell me this. Do you think, you said the world is working as it is. Could you make an argument then that everybody listening to this right now in some way has shamanistic powers because they are listening to you speak versus some other podcast?
Usually. I mean, if they resonate with me, they probably do so because they have, again, the people that come to me and keep coming to me, they tend to have all three of them. I mean, everyone does, right? What is shared. Everyone has this. Like, everyone that goes deep into shamanism, like, oh my God, I got to share this with the world. Everyone that goes deep into sorcery, they're probably quiet about it, but they do want to share their experiences, even though it's taboo to talk about these really grandiose mystical states and, cities, supernatural power. It's very taboo to talk about because it's distracting and it's not the point. However, I'm quite open to that. And, liberation itself, it's all goes hand in hand. These are all things, all three of these things are something that when you finally discover them deeply, it's so fucking powerful that you want to tell everybody about it. And even if people won't listen, it doesn't matter because there's an audience and that audience is based on an algorithm. Thank God, the holy algorithm. And it's uniting people.
The holy algorithm. I love that.
You might not be able to do this at Target off the cuff, but you can do this online all day long.
No, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And I wonder about the way you spoke about being open to these other kinds of mystical experiences. I do think, speaking back to those radical non-dualists, that there definitely is a discrimination against, I suppose Ken Wilber would call it the realm of the transpersonal, somewhere in there.
Right.
This idea of once you start getting into spirits and ghosts and perhaps occult magic, Aleister Crowley, all this stuff. And I've always gone, but that stuff seems kind of cool too.
All the interesting rabbit holes, even though they're reality tunnels, even though they're kind of dualistic. It's still fun even now. Like, I'm not gonna, I don't know, I guess I wouldn't say I made a choice. It's just of my nature to be bold and radically honest and just wild. And so trying to shove something into a cookie cutter McMold or trying we have 100 radical non-duality speakers and they're all saying the same thing and they're all trying to negate certain things. And it's like I wanted to do something that fully honored the potency and relevance of that, but kept going, like didn't get stuck in that, And so I had a handful of close friends that were like me, and I started joking around and I said, we were in that, but we took it a little further and we aren't confined to that particular expression. And yet we honor it, and yet we're not confined to it. And so I started jokingly calling us pirate rogues, non-dual pirate rogues. It was like a joke between my like five closest friends type of deal. And then people were basically begging me to create a Facebook group for a couple years. And then just out of the blue, when I had that little extra mini awakening after my awakening, I had a falling away of that remaining 10%, if you will. And that was like 2.5 weeks ago or something.
Oh my gosh, what does that mean now? What is that?
Four and a half years after awakening, and then finally that last 10% just melted away, and of the trauma and things, it's something in me felt even more liberated, like being given wings, it felt like. And like a day or two after that, I was like, I think it's about time to start that group. And I started the group, and in like a people joined like hotcakes. Even though it's a private secret group, I invited certain people, and it's been, I don't know, two weeks, something like that, maybe a little longer than that. and it has over 560 members now.
Yeah, what do you think? I mean, with all these abstract, absurdist posts at times, why are people drawn to this? What do you think it is?
It's the liberation from the stale, cold, sterile, stagnant misunderstanding of radical non-duality. So people that misunderstand non-duality will get the wrong idea from certain expressions of it. So this is like a refreshing of that. It's still honoring it. It's still including it. It's still an integral part of what's being expressed here. It's just not limited to it or anything else. And so a lot of these groups just take it very seriously. Yeah. So this one isn't, you know what I mean? It's like a healing from the traumas of the spiritual communities we find ourselves in. And it's not taking itself too seriously. There isn't an overly serious hierarchy. There isn't any, you know what I mean? It's a playground. It's recess. It's a bar fight. It's uncharted waters. It's pushing the frontier. It's the cutting edge of creating that spiritual community that you were wondering when it would start. Well, this is, you know, it's already happening. Everything's already, there's a few of us on the cutting edge of not exploring this, but generating this. And instead of finding an expression of this, it's being expressed, you know, and we are the expressions, all of us. We aren't here to express, we are here to be the expressed. So we aren't living lives, we're being lived as life, as the dream of life, as aliveness. And what that aliveness is, it's energetic.
And so it's ultimately aware. I think this is really a radical message, and but a non-radical message. It's a pirate's message. It's a pirate rogue message for the people.
Part of it too, the rogue part of it is it's also like, it's like I'm on my own. I don't fit into any community. Like, yeah, exactly. You'd fit right in my community because none of us, that's the point, right? It's like, you want to be the outsider. You want to be the one. You're like, no, I'm on my own. Like, I'm not, I don't actually fit into any of these. No, you can't contain them. Yeah, exactly. That's how you fit in. It's like, it's ironic because the way I first started putting it was a fleet of pirate rogues. Like, it doesn't make any sense because it's like a group for loners, a group for lone wolves. Like, what?
Yeah.
And yet there's something refreshing about that because it's not trying to force anybody into anything. It's just free. It's just a demonstration of total, utter freedom and clarity.
I have to ask you one more thing before we really tie this together, which is, and it's a loaded question in some ways.
Oh, good.
Maybe you have a simple answer. Probably. When people come to you for empowerment coaching, or people come to you and even just trying to make sense of this stuff in in their understanding of the world, there definitely seems,
or their misunderstanding.
Yes, right. There are still, like you mentioned, you do website design. Mm-hmm. People have to pay the bills. Yep. People, and there's this idea of not even, well, okay. Certainly entrepreneurialism these days mm-hmm. is equated with some kind of personal transformation, self-development, the idea of becoming a one-stop shop business person that can generate money, that can survive resources, and quote-unquote succeeding in that. Mm-hmm. How does this way of living reflect evolving in a way that actually suits living on this planet?
Yeah, so from a non-dual perspective, there's no such thing as success or failure or anyone to have it. And so that is to say, you're not responsible for your actions. They're just happening. So whether you feed 3,000 orphans or murder 12 people, either way, you didn't do anything. So there's no pride or shame to be had in the awakened state because it's simply happening. And so all shame, guilt, embarrassment, fear melts away. And what's left is unconditional love and clarity. And how that relates into doing business and things. In my case, I'm particularly fortunate to have people that, you know, like people won't know that I do websites. They'll know I'm a speaker and oh, you do websites? Oh, I'll definitely go with you if you do websites, you know. So it's right, like, oh, cool. Right. Like, I appreciate that, you know. And it just all starts to connect, you know. It's like if I'm talking to someone, oh, you know, they're like, well, I want to talk to you, but I don't really want to, you know, go into that non-duality thing. Like, wow, well, now I offer empowerment-based life coaching. We can talk dualistically and still get, you know, a good chunk of that benefit in a way that it might not be frustrating for you. Instead of trying to seek enlightenment, maybe you just are trying to figure out how to, you know, feel better and how to feel more empowered or less anxious, or how to have your limiting beliefs deconstructed. Similar to cognitive behavioral therapy in a way, you know, but cognitive behavioral therapy costs thousands of dollars.
Right.
So,
right.
And you know, I have a degree in psychology. I have a degree in philosophy. I had a concentration in behavioral neuroscience. So in a way, there's this shamanic tendency, right? As I've said, there's an energetic component here that can be transmitted and spooky things happen non-locally if you tune into it. And there's a shamanic side, you know, of trying to heal, which again is the recovering rescuer in me, which is kind of dualistic, and it's fine. Okay, it's fine. I'm a little helper and it's a sickness. Okay, it's fine. And there's non-duality for those that are, you know, desperately seeking to end the suffering and to awaken.
Right, right. So you still believe that there is a world where, I mean, and this is where I'm just trying to figure out what's going on with personal development and transformation, because a lot of people would say, oh, well, be passionate about something and then pursue that. And you're not saying, hey, look, don't follow your, I mean, yeah, what about this notion?
What I'm saying is
follow your dreams.
Well, maybe not your dreams, but follow whatever resonates with you naturally and instinctually on a gut level, energetically, when detecting the subtlety. In other words, think about it in terms of energy and whatever resonates with you. Like, if it feels good and it feels right, then you should follow that. You shouldn't necessarily follow your preconceived, contrived, seeking notions of what would make you happy. Well, if I was a rock star, so maybe I'll do music. Like, not necessarily. Right. And if you're like, you know, it doesn't, you know, and you're forcing yourself to do that because you think that's the thing you want and that's the big thing you identify with, it's not really necessarily true, right? Like, but if you go to some soul-crushing job and you hate it, you make lots of money, you're still not going to be happy. So you need something in between. I think in general, people are happiest when they're creating something uniquely of them, you know, like even something as simple as making websites, even though it's some technical, dualistic, ordinary thing, it's like, it's not that I'm like geeking out about it. Like, I'm not like all about it. Like, I'm not one of those computer guys like, oh, this new hard drive I got. Like, I'm not like that, you know, like, yeah. I care less. I'm more of an artist or a creative. But the creating anything is inherently satisfying because we are all secretly the creator.
Right.
So when you are a co-creator, generating your own thing in your own way, it feels better. That's why entrepreneurs and digital nomads and things like that are such a big deal right now, is because it feels good. And you should do whatever feels good. If murdering people with an axe feels good, do it. If feeding orphans feels good, do it. You know what I mean? If it really resonates with you, why would anything stop you? Yeah.
No, wait a minute. I'm thinking of the news report that goes, I listened to the Open Loops pod. This person listened to Open Loops and...
Hey, let's put a legal disclaimer on here. Just kidding. But you know what I mean? Like,
Yes.
The mind needs to hear something shocking to be snapped out of its contrived, unnatural patterns. And so that's one of the roles of the sage, is to shock the seeker. And the seeker usually will become addicted to the shock and keep coming back to be shocked out of those limiting patterns. even though they're held to be the most dear things in the life of the seeker, my identifications, those are the hangups. And those are what people freak out about. And if you challenge someone's beliefs, they'll nail you to a cross and set it on fire. You know, that's what happened to Jesus, Socrates. They were awake.
Yeah. So what? Okay. How do we protect you?
Oh, I don't need protecting.
Oh. But
I don't need armor. I don't need, you know, one day they'll take a windowless van and abduct me and torture me and kill me and put it on YouTube. That's fine.
You're okay. With that.
That was perfect.
Andrew Kirschbaum, the non-duality speaker. Definitely check him out. Sign up for one of those talks. I'm telling you, I am just blissful right now. This feels amazing. I'm kind of shocked at how much is transferring through.
Literally shocked.
I don't even understand. I'm going, why am I? There's no drugs in my system. I have not had anything to drink, and yet I am so high right now. What is that?
Blissed out. Yeah.
Yeah. So cool. Hey, look, I'm grateful you came on. Thank you so much, Andrew. Please, grateful. I hope to have you come back again.
Absolutely.
Non-duality speaker, Andrew Kirschbaum, thanks so much for coming on the show. Wow, I'm smiling thinking about this episode. Yeah, breathe with me, y'all. Here's what I'm wondering, do any of you listen to this part at the end? If you listen to this part of this podcast, reach out to me at TheGregBornstein on Instagram and say, I listened to this ending. Just the test. Very curious. I want to thank Ronnie McGilvery for the theme music. Zero Boy for the pre-theme music. And I want to thank all of you for your birthday wishes. It was an amazing quinceañera that I'll never forget.